Thanks, Eileen. Thank you very much.
It's the Ray Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1. Wash your hands.
Good afternoon on this Thursday afternoon. How are you? 51551 or ray@rte.ie. Lidl have been trending on Twitter today. Why, you ask? Well, they announced this morning that from tomorrow, they'll be selling antigen tests across all 168 shops in Ireland. There will be a max limit of 5 packs per customer, and they'll go on sale for €24.99. That's €5 a kit, but I think you have to buy the 5 of them together. And the statement says, as we add these antigen tests to our range, we urge our shoppers to continue to stringently follow the public health advice. We hope that by offering them, these tests will add an extra level of reassurance to our customers as they follow that advice. And of course, they're not as precise as the other tests. And I think my understanding is that you have to be in the throes of the virus for it to be detected with the antigen tests. But I suppose if you're going to be sure, if you were visiting somebody who was vulnerable or whatever, you might want to purchase a pack of these. We're going to try it out anyway, just to see how it works out on air. If we get them by today, we'll do it today. If not, we'll do it tomorrow. Tomorrow, there's always tomorrow. Sad news, really, for Johnny Sexton. A big talk about whether he would be selected by Warren Gatland for the Lions tour this year, and he hasn't been selected. And that would have been his last chance to be selected because he's 35 now, won't be around the next Lions tour. James Ryan wasn't selected, Gary Ringrose and Keane Healy, well, that's his last. For James Ryan and Gary Ringrose, they might be still around the next time the Lions get together. 8 Irish players on the panel. So 4 backs, Bundy Aki, Robbie Henshaw, who's had a great season. Conor Murray is there as well. Who's the other back there? And then there's Andrew Porter in the front row. That's big news for him. Tadhg Byrne, big news for him and his family. Ian Henderson got the call up, and Jack Conan. Is that 8, or am I missing somebody out? If I am, Conor Murray. Did I mention him already? There's one more there. I can't find him, but there's 8 Irish players anyway. And sad news for Johnny Sexton, because I suppose he was hoping that he'd get the call from Warren Gatland, but he hasn't. Remember we were talking about Wally the Walrus? He turned up down in Valencia down there, and then he ended up in Tenby on the Welsh coast. Well, Tenby has been gripped by Wally Mania. They've called the Walrus Wally, as you would. And there's a 2-page spread in the Sun today about his newfound fame. So there's Wally cushions and Wally T-shirts and Wally baseball hats and Wally. And there's Wally face masks, of course. And that's Wally there. He's big in Tenby, big in Tenby. Do you know who's big in our house? Bob Ross. The joy of painting. You'll know Bob with his afro hair and his beard. And they're re-showing The Joy of Painting from the late 80s and early 90s on BBC 4 at 7:30. Now, we've been talking a lot recently about meditation and mindfulness and living in the now and autonomous sensory meridian response, those noises that make you relax and give you a little tingle. Well, Bob does all of that. He does all of that. It's mad. He just pulls you in. He pulls you into his scenery with his little lakes and his mountains and his trees. The things he can do with the corner of a 2-inch paintbrush. Unbelievable. He's a big fan of the platinum white, just so you know. Ochre is another big colour in his toolkit. And his voice is just, it's just delicious, wonderfully relaxing, just out of this world.
Maybe right in here there's a happy little bush, and I'm just barely touching. Just enough to bend the bristles, the smallest amount. A lot of paint on the brush, a lot of paint. And we can go into some Indian yellow and yellow ochre, a little bit of that. Just break it up a little so the color's not all the same.
Thanks, Bob.
You can just make all kinds of little things happen. Wherever you think they should be. Mm. There's one right there. That's where they ought to be. Where you decide. Because this is your painting, your world.
Our world. And I was just thinking of it. What have you put them to music? You know, just a little, nice little bit of music. And then Bob comes in and out, you know.
You can just make all kinds of little things happen.
Yeah.
Because this is your painting, your world.
What is it, Bob?
Because this is your painting, your world.
Thanks, Bob.
There's one right there. That's where they ought to be.
Ah, yeah. Yeah.
Can just make all kinds of little things happen. because this is your painting, your world. There's one right there. That's where they ought to be.
7:30, BBC Four. He'll drift away into Bob's world. And the brilliant thing is that he respects our worlds too. It's just, he has a lovely, wonderful way about him. Died very young. He was only 52, complications with lymphoma back in 1995. And he was making The Joy of Painting right up until 1994 for PBS in the States. And it's very straightforward television. It's him, his palette, his colours, his easel, and his array of brushes. And that's it for half an hour. And he creates this amazing vista on his canvas. That's Bob. I can suggest you go to Bob. It's well worth a visit. It's well worth a visit to Bob's world. Bob's world as opposed to Wayne's world. Now, mealworms could soon be on the menu in restaurants across Europe. Sorry if you're eating your lunch. I should have warned you about that. It's a late lunch. You should be finished your lunch and thinking about what you're going to have for dinner. Yeah, the 27 EU member states gave their approval on Tuesday for a proposal to put the Tenebrio molitor beetle's larvae, mealworm to you and me, on the market as novel food. Earlier this year, the European Food Safety Authority ruled that the dried yellow mealworm, both in its whole form and as a powder additive, is safe for human consumption. They've been eating it for years and I'm a celebrity, get me out of here. It's high in fat and fibre, the good fat and the good fibre. And also it's a big source of protein. So all, they've been predicting this for a long time. And in many countries, you know, they eat mealworm, they eat ants and all sorts of grubs and things like that. So it's been coming and it's here. I don't know if I'm ready to order a bowl of mealworms when I go into my local restaurant. It doesn't matter if they're in cheese, smothered in garlic with chilli, with the most beautiful virgin olive oil. I don't care. I'm just not ready. I'm not ready for mealworms. 51551 ray@rte.ie. What's on your mind today? Let us know. And as you do, I'll tell you about our quiz of today. Today is the 6th of May, and we've cobbled together 10 questions on events that happened on this day over the years. The big sporting stories, news stories, scientific breakthroughs, TV shows, songs, movies, the whole lot. It's in there, and we're looking for two people to answer 5 questions each and win a prize. Well, one person will win a prize, the other person gets a mug. Which is a prize, I suppose, strictly speaking. And all our prizes this week come from the Doyle Hotel Collection. Today, it's a 2-night stay with breakfast in the River Lee Hotel. Each morning, you'll get breakfast in the beautiful Mirror Room with dinner on one evening in the River Club with a gorgeous riverside terrace right on the banks of the Lee. You can find out more at doylecollection.com. Doylecollection.com. Our qualifying question is this. In which Irish county would you find the town of Castlebar? Which Irish county would you find the town of Castlebar? 1850-715-900. And we could be talking to you after 4 o'clock today. I had another thing there I wanted to play for you. It's there's a lot of good stuff on TikTok these days. And you know when you're a parent and you have a bad day, you know from the start. Do you ever get one of those days, boys? Do you ever get one of those days when nothing goes right from morning to night? Do you ever get one of those days? And imagine if you had one of those days, and imagine then if you decided that you're going to deliver your description of your day as a sports coach. How would that pan out? Well, Kyle Berger did exactly that. So it was a bad day, started off with the spilling of the milk, and then there was the losing of the keys. And how did it go for you, Kyle? How did it go?
You sum up the day.
Yeah, honestly, just felt like we got behind early. After the milk spill and the marker on the wall, we just felt like we were playing catch up the rest of the day.
Right before you went to the store, you called a timeout. Was there an attitude change after that?
Yeah, it felt like we were losing our heads there for a minute, so we wanted to just calm things down and get back to the basics.
Did you ever find your keys?
No. No idea where they are.
You gave them a snack half hour before dinner. Was that planned?
No. I lost track of time. Wasn't thinking. And so, you know, 3 bites at dinner. That's on me.
You know what you need, Kyle? You need a bit of Bob.
You can just make all kinds of little things happen.
He does, you know. It's your world. It's your world, Kyle.
Because this is your painting, your world.
Yeah. And you can paint the unspilt milk. And you know what they say about spilt milk? No use crying over it. You can do whatever you like.
There's one right there. That's where they ought to be.
That's it. Thanks, Bob. Thank you. His voice is amazing, so soothing. Love, Bob, says Marie in Donamead. And with Bob Ross's gentle nature, I was surprised to learn he was in the military. Yeah, I just saw it on his Wikipedia page for 20 years. He has a real cult following in the US. I bought my 27-year-old son-in-law a Bob Ross coffee cup that's black when cold, and when filled with a hot beverage, a painting slowly appears. Aha, I want one of those. That's top tacky stuff. Please play Bob's soothing voice again as you discuss mealworms on the menu. It might help me come down from the ceiling. Mealworms, that's violent. It's not, it's natural. And it's a lot nicer to the environment than cows. Mealworms or cows, I'll still go for the steak, thank you very much. For the moment, I might change.
There's one right there. That's where they ought to be.
That's where they ought to be, Bob. That's where they ought to be. Give us a bit more, Bob.
You can just make all kinds of little things happen. Wherever you think they should be. There's one right there. That's where they ought to be. Where you decide. Because this is your painting, your world.
Thank you, Bob. Thank you. Thank you. 51551, ray@rte.ie. Good afternoon. Excuse me for a moment while I abuse my position on the radio and say a happy birthday to my wife, Jennifer Kelly, who celebrates her birthday today. No, I won't tell your age. Happy birthday, Jenny. See you later. Now, please play Bob's soothing voice again. So somebody, it's got them going there. I couldn't agree with you more. Love Bob Ross. His voice is so therapeutic. Could listen to him all day. Such a talented artist and so sad he passed so young. Love of one of his one-liners last night. We don't make mistakes. We just have happy accidents. He was a legend. Siobhan from Dublin. He made it look so easy. And that's the illusion with people who are very good at what they do. To make it look really easy. And then we all think we can do it. And then we try. They ran the entire run of Bob's programs on Twitch a few years ago, one after the other. They were frantically popular among a largely young audience, says Brendan Conroy. How are you doing, Brendan? And I think you should consider doing a painting by following along with Bob. Even better would be to get some listeners to do the same, a prize perhaps for the best one. Stephen, just an idea, he says. Painting on the radio. It'll never work, Stephen. It'll never work. But they used to have dancing on the radio, didn't they? I see your Bob and raise you a Matthew McConaughey. His sleep recording does it for me all the time. Patricia Milan. I'm not familiar with Matthew McConaughey's sleep recordings, but I will search it out this evening when I go home. You might be interested just on the antigen testing thing to know that the UK offers free antigen tests in Boots boxes of 7, readily available to anyone who requires them or wants them. I was in the UK myself for work a few weeks ago and was able to readily pick up 2 boxes of these antigen tests. There's a system on the test whereby you can upload your results. My friend there has a daughter and they have to test themselves twice a week before they go to school and upload the results. One wonders why these tests aren't available free here. That's what our Niamh was saying. Exactly. 25 quid in Lidl at the moment. And Sharon was asking that question. And it's just different countries are approaching it differently. I was talking to somebody this morning and a friend of hers who lives in the United States of America sent her on this flyer for an event that's happening this evening, May the 6th, 2021. Immunity in the Community. Still need your COVID-19 vaccine? Come to our Immunity in the Community. You choose event. So here you go. Right, you ready? You choose the time. No appointment needed, just show up. You choose the vaccine. So you can choose between Pfizer, Moderna or Johnson & Johnson. And it gets better, lads. It gets better. You choose your snack. So you can have a hot dog or a hamburger. And this Thursday, May 6, 2021, drive-through vaccination clinic. Never get out of your car. Old Saybrook Middle School. There, immunity in the community. That's the way they're doing it in the States. 51551, ray@rte.ie.
The Ray Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1. Email ray@rte.ie. The Ray Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1.
51551 for your texts. High on Hoth Hill was a lonely goat herd. Odlay, 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 he who. I kid you not. In about 2 months' time, goats will be returning to Hoth Hill in groundbreaking conservation grazing project. There's a very unique job on offer for the right person. They're looking for a goat herder. Fingal County Council have teamed up with the Old Irish Goat Society and are looking for a goat herder to look after the tribe. Is a tribe of 25 old Irish goats being brought in to manage the flammable gorse and heather on the hill. Sean Carolan is the vice chairman of the Old Irish Goat Society, and he's on the line now. How are you doing, Sean?
I'm good, Ray. How are you?
Good. Thanks for taking our call today. I didn't realise there was such thing as the Old Irish Goat Society. How long are you in existence?
We were set up in 2007, Ray, so about 14, 15 years now.
Right. And tell us about the Old Irish Goat.
Well, the Old Irish Goat, Ray, is our native breed of goat. It predates the Neolithic. It was brought in originally by Neolithic farmers to clear farmland. Mm. It's a beautiful animal, a small goat with long flowing hair and a beautiful quiff and large horns.
I saw some of them on that lovely documentary on the burn. They're still wild down there, and the young little kids all white and stumbling around the place. There was some lovely footage there. Did you see that? Yodelay, 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 ee-hoo. Sean?
Yes, Ray.
Yeah, did you see that, the documentary on the burn?
Sorry, there was a bit of interference there. Can you just tell me that again?
No, you're okay. We'll keep going. We won't talk about the burn anymore. So the plan is to take goats from Mayo and bring them up the Howth Head. Is that it?
Yeah, that's the plan. Yeah, Ray, we started a conservation breeding program back in 2015 of the Old Irish Goat, and we have 80 goats now in the national herd. And we're planning to bring 25 of those up to Howth Head this summer.
And they're going to act as natural sort of trimmers and lawnmowers and all sorts of things, aren't they?
Yeah, well, I suppose there's two, I suppose, main things that they're going to do. One is reduce fire risk, and two is help to improve the heathland biodiversity. Right. So I suppose heathland is essentially a farmed landscape, and it relies on grazing to have that optimum level of biodiversity. But if it's not grazed, it gets woody, mm-hmm. and it also you'd also see a lot of gorse growing on heath that's undergrazed, and gorse is a very oily wood, and it's a fire risk. So yeah, the goats will help to clear a lot of that overgrowth that isn't optimum on the heathlands and Howth.
Right. So you're looking for somebody to herd these goats, which is, I didn't realise there were still goat herders out there.
Well, it's surprising the skill sets that are out there, Ray, when you look for them. Mm. Particularly, you know, we're looking for someone with farming skills and probably from a farming background. You know, someone that would be good with, very good with a sheepdog, used to working with goats or sheep or cattle with, right. you know, good animal husbandry skills, but also someone that's able to engage with the local community there in Howth and promote the project, because, you know, this is a pioneering project, really. It's the first of its kind in Ireland that will tackle, upland conservation using the Old Irish Goat.
Yeah, it's very exciting. It's very exciting. So this person is going to need a farming background, good herding skills, good with a sheepdog, be good with the public, and I believe they have to be good with social media as well, because, as you say, you want them to promote the project. So there's a lot of skills there, isn't there, needed?
There is, yeah. But, like, you know, there is a lot of people in Ireland that would have those skill sets, okay. you know, particularly people that have, you know, dedicated themselves in terms of agriculture and that.
Yeah. Tell me about this GPS tracking thing. It's a Nordic system that's been used in the country for the first time.
Yeah, the plan is to use the Nordic no-fence system. So it's basically a collar that the goat wears. It's got a little phone chip in it, and it uses GPS to locate the goats. So what you can do is you can, you know, put a draw a boundary on your iPhone or your mobile phone,
right.
and you can train the goats with the collars to stay within that boundary. So it uses audible cues principally to keep the goats within the zone. So as they approach the boundary, they will get an audible cue that they're approaching it. And
go back, go
because
back.
They're
Sorry.
Yeah, pretty much, yeah.
Right. And then there's a little, and is this cruel, Sean? There's a little, if they don't sort of obey the audio signal, then there's a little shock.
There's a little shock, yeah. Well, I suppose what I'd say about that is the system has been approved and tested by European Department of Agriculture's.
Yeah.
And also what's good about the system, what's beneficial to the goats is that they can get through that. So as opposed to, say, a fence where they might be more vulnerable to attack because they're enclosed, they can get through the little shock if they need to flee.
Uh-huh.
So it gives them that option. So it's a good system that way.
When was the last time there were goats up on the hill in Howth?
Well, I'd have to rely on the people of Howth to confirm this, but my understanding is that it would have been the 1970s.
Right.
So it's a half a century ago.
So they're going to be a novelty up there when they arrive, aren't they?
Well, they sure are. Well, I mean, they're a novelty for most people in Ireland. I mean, they're such a beautiful animal, and they've been so obscure, if you like, in our history. But there's a massive cultural connection between the goat and Howth and the goat and Dublin.
45,000 is the salary, and the closing date for applications is the 17th of May.
Yes.
Yeah. Rightio. In domestication, the breed could give up to 200 gallons of milk a year. Is there a photograph of a woman milking a goat somewhere?
There's a lovely photograph of a woman milking an old Irish goat in the 1950s, with her two sons beside her, one holding a jug, and some other goats in the background. It's really an iconic image, actually, of the old Irish goat and Howth and Dublin.
As I say, it's a very exciting project. The person who gets the job eventually, they're going to have to surrender to the fact that one evening when they come into the pub and all their mates are there, they're going to be met with this.
High on a hill was a lonely goat herd, lay, hood, lay, hood, lay, hee-hoo. Loud was the voice of the lonely goat herd, lay, hood, lay, hood, lo.
You know it's going to happen, don't you, Sean?
Yeah, for sure.
Sean, thanks so much for taking time out to talk to us. Sean Carolan, the Vice Chairman of the Old Irish Goat Society.
The Ray Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1. Text 51551. The Ray Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1.
Where can I get those goat collars from my teenage lads? Asked that person. In jest, of course. With no wolves or bears to worry about, being a goat herding in Ireland should be a doddle. Goat herder. Saw the goats on Dalkey Island at sunrise this morning. Kind of surprised me, says Nick. And Ireland's eye could do with some goats to tackle the wildfires that burn rare birds' nests. The island is owned by hundreds of species of nesting seabirds. Every year there's a fire. Well, maybe if this is a success, they'll expand it. I think the goats in the burn are mixed, interbreed with domestic goats. The pure Irish wild goat is the one you are talking about now, as far as I know, says Bernie. Thanks, Bernie. And Lorraine wants to know the name of the music we played to accompany Bob. It's this bit of music here. What you're talking about, is it? Yeah. That's Luke Bloom from his latest instrumental album, which is, it's lovely just to have on the background there. Have that on the CD and then Bob on the TV. You know, that's
just make all kinds of little things happen.
Yeah. That'll work perfectly. That's it. Okay. Right, now, 23-year-old Jack Woolley is gearing up for the biggest challenge of his life as he prepares for the Tokyo Olympics. He's going to compete representing us, and he's going to be the first Irish man to take part in Taekwondo in the Olympic Games. And he joins us on the line now. How are you doing, Jack?
Hiya, I'm good.
It's a bit late to say congratulations because you've known since December 2019 that you've qualified, haven't you?
Yeah, so the end of 2019 and we qualified and we had the only a few months to like kind of prepare for the games. But obviously with the postponement, we've had like a good while to wait now.
Yeah. Is that a good thing or a bad thing? So you've had, it'll be sort of over 18 months between your qualification and the actual first competition in Tokyo.
Yeah, I think it definitely works out in my favour because it's given me like an extra year to get better and stronger and just kind of be more comfortable because we spent so many years trying to qualify and when we did, it was like, okay, we had to like switch on almost straight away and start preparing for the games. But now that we've had a little bit longer, I've able to have like a breather, refocus myself and kind of just hit the ground running with training because we haven't been able to train like consecutively that much over the years because we're constantly on planes traveling to competitions. So it was nice to kind of have that little bit of time to practice, go in training and just kind of have a proper fixed schedule and just, you know, train to get better, stronger and go into Tokyo this year feeling 100%.
Yeah. When you say we, it's you and Robert, is it? He's your trainer.
Yeah, me and Robert, yeah.
You're a tight team.
Yeah, very. We're very close. I've known him since I was 8 years old. So we've grown up together and he's been my coach and he's been there every step of the way. So very grateful for the teamwork we have together.
Bring us back to when you were 8. I know you started doing taekwondo because your older brother was doing it and he started doing it because he was being bullied. Was that it?
Yeah. So actually I started when I was 6 years old. Yeah. You weren't allowed to start until you were 6. So my brother was a few years older and he was bullied in primary school. So my parents put him in for like self-defense reasons. And I just kind of went down and I was a bit of a annoying wreck the head kid, kind of down the back. I wasn't able to join in, kicking my legs about, showing off like the way I have been and just kind of showing everyone like how flexible I was. And I was just itching to get in. And then on my 6th birthday, I was able to join in, got stuck in and I fell in love with it. And I haven't looked back since.
And back then when you first met Robert, and you were having the chats, as you do when you're that age, and you say, what do you want to be when you grow up? Was there mention of the Olympics?
It was definitely something there that, not necessarily for me, but it was something around the sport. Like somebody wanted to become the first Olympian in the sport for Ireland. Yeah. Necessarily at that age, probably didn't think it was me, but, you know, I set my goals. My first competition, I just loved it. And to be honest, the type of person I am, it's not that number one only just loving the sport, it's also, it comes from a love of winning things. Like I'm one of those people that at Christmas, if you lose a board game, I'm going to throw the board, you know. So that's just me down to a T. So it kind of worked hand in hand, loving the sport and also loving winning. So I think seeing an ultimate goal of an Olympic Games and getting there, and that's like the one big thing I set my mind on. So probably around the age of 9, 10 is when I started realizing, okay, we'll go and give it a go. And then it wasn't until maybe when I was like 14 that I realized, oh, I'm actually quite good at this. This is a big possibility. And now we're here.
We're here. And you just missed out on Rio. What age were you in the lead up to Rio?
Yeah, so I was 17. I was in fifth year trying to get into Rio.
Right. So that didn't work out, and that was very upsetting for you at the time?
Now looking back on it, I was young, but it was upsetting for me at the time because I was so close. Like, you needed a gold or silver to get in on the qualification tournament, and I got a bronze.
Right.
And at that age, like, nobody expected anything of me except for myself. I went in, had no, like, pressure on me, and I gave it everything I could. I just missed out. I cried on national telly, not great for a 17-year-old who's still in school to be seen crying on the telly, but, you know, it just showed that it meant so much to me. Yeah. And, you know, it pushed me more to get in automatically. Like, you can get in on a ranking system, so the top 6 in the world qualify automatically. And we set our goals that that's what I wanted to do, and that's how we were going to get in, that we weren't going to put the pressure on ourselves of having to go to a qualification tournament. So we just spent the last 4 years trying to get the ranking points and we got
did.
In.
You did, yeah. In fairness, probably people aren't going to say anything, seeing that you're, you know, an expert in taekwondo. They're not going to say anything about you crying on the telly, are they?
No, I would hope not.
It's not going to happen. Just explain to us about taekwondo. I was looking at you in action there. The balance involved is amazing. Just for people who don't know what the difference between judo and taekwondo and karate, would you just give us a sort of a bluffer's guide? an introduction.
Yeah, so basically, I just basically tried to explain Taekwondo was similar to like boxing with your feet. Like you kick to the body, you kick to the head. A lot of it now is very single leg dominated. So like one leg is up in the air and we kick and stuff like that. But we wear magnets in our sensor socks. So we have these like little socks that we wear,
right,
and they connect to the body armor and the headgear to like, and they have sensors in them. So,
so it's like fencing, the bias. Like fencing, is it?
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. Fencing, and it makes a fence in boxing, but just with your legs.
No, I mean, the technology is what they use in fencing. That's what I was saying there.
Yeah, but also similar to like finding the points on the person you're sparring as well.
Okay.
Similar to fencing, like you're trying to find the gaps. And like, because we're kicking, it's might be easier to see because it's not as, it takes longer to kick than it would be to punch.
Yes.
So finding the gaps is very important when somebody's got good cover, you know.
And I was saying about balance, it's amazing because you're say on your left leg and you're kicking with your right leg, but you can do a number of different kicks whilst still just balancing on one leg. It's phenomenal.
Yeah, it's a mix of good balance and a good flexibility, because that's definitely something that you not necessarily need in the sport. Like, I know there's some athletes who don't necessarily have extreme flexibility, but it definitely helps. The easier you can get your leg into someone's face, the better.
And I see that you can still put your foot around your own head.
Yeah, I never lost that. You know how like you can bend like babies' legs and they're always having their legs wrapped around their head? I never lost that. So since I'm born, basically, I'm just like a big infant.
Is that what happens at family gatherings? Go on, Jack, do the old trick there. Put your foot around your head.
That's basically what happens, Social events. Oh, show us the splits. Oh, can you put your leg around your head? That's literally every single time.
Can you do the splits, yeah?
Yeah, yeah. I've never not been able to do them.
Gee, that's amazing. That's amazing. So a long time coming. I'm just wondering how lockdown was for you, because obviously Taekwondo is a sport that you need a sparring partner. There's no point, you know, being at home sort of, you know, looking in the mirror and kicking. You need somebody to kick, don't you?
Yeah.
So how did that work out?
It actually worked out really well for me. So the first lockdown was actually probably the best few months of my life, if not the best, because we actually got back from a competition from Sofia Open, and we just landed, and my best friend usually stays in my house and we get a Domino's because of all the cutting weight. So it's like a little bit of a blowout. And he came over and we seen on the news, we were like, oh, there could be a possible lockdown. I was like, it's only supposed to be 2 weeks, you know, you just stay in my house. And then 3.5 months later, he's still here. But luckily we got equipment off Sport Ireland and like a strength and conditioning stuff, like a rack and a load of weights, and we were able to spar each other, able to do some pad work and stuff. And I was just really grateful to have him here, especially like he's my best mate as well. So it was nice to have that kind of social aspect. It just felt very fresh, and
so
it was a good time.
He's a huge part then of your preparation for the Olympic Games, isn't he? A huge part.
Yeah, he's a massive part. Very grateful to have him, because I know over the years that Ireland's not necessarily had a massive team, but we definitely have some good up-and-coming athletes, and he's one of them. And we were similar in weight for a while now. He's gotten a little bit heavier now. He's grown up. He's coming a man, but he's still my training partner. We work well together. We buzz off each other, and there's always good atmosphere in training, so very grateful for him.
Does he have a name? Are you allowed to say his name? Or
David.
David, okay.
David.
Right, so it's not going to be an Olympic Games like any other Olympic Games, but it doesn't matter to you because this is your first one, so you've nothing to compare it to.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Taking the positives of everything.
Yeah, exactly. So, but it will usually, you know, when you would have a party of people, and I'm sure your family were intending to travel, were they?
Yeah. So my parents actually had their flights booked, because we qualified in the December, so they had a few months to book it before COVID hit. And they had their flights booked, and then they had to rebook them because they thought they were going to be able to travel for this year with the postponement. And then they found out that they wouldn't be allowed in the audience. So that was unfortunate. But, you know, for me, I'm not used to having people in the audience. I travel a lot on my own. My parents aren't really there shouting for me. I think I'd find them quite distracting. So it doesn't really faze me. I prefer them not there.
Right.
But like the amount of support they've given me over the years, like I'd love them to say that they were there, and they were like there when I become Olympic champion. It would be amazing to have my parents there, but you know, it could become a distraction. And for me, I'd probably prefer them not to be there.
And is that on the cards, the gold medal? Is it, Jack?
Oh, 100%.
Yeah. Is it?
Yeah, because if you think about it, if I go out and I give 100% of what I'm capable of, I don't think there's anybody on the day that's going to be able to beat me. And that's just being truthful. I feel like I've gotten so much better. I've become stronger. I fit the weight a little bit better. And, you know, I've just grown so much as an athlete. And from past performances against other athletes that have qualified, it's either I've either won or it's been very, very close. Mm. So there's no reason at all why I can't go out and become Olympic champion.
Brilliant. Of course, they've had a year off as well, and they might have had the same experience of you. They might have a David at home with them as well. You know,
exactly. You know, you never know. Happening.
Yeah, and that's a big thing as well, because usually there would be competitions in the lead up to the Olympics, so that you're up against unknowns.
Yeah, well, I've been lucky that I've been able to compete a little bit. So we had European Championships, Olympic weight categories back in December. Right. I took a bronze.
Right.
Then we had Euros recently. That didn't go to plan, but, you know, I don't want to peak too early.
We've
got one more competition before the games. That's in Mexico.
You will get to see who you're up against. Right, I got that wrong.
Yeah.
Okay. So who are the people to watch out for? What's the strong taekwondo country?
South Korea is probably the most known, because that's where it originates, and they've qualified a good amount of athletes. They're constantly getting medals and stuff. Iran is a massive country in the sport, very diverse style and very strong country. So there'll be two athletes in my division that we'll be watching out for.
Yeah. How do you control the emotion on a competition day? I was watching Klopp, the Liverpool manager, the other day, and he was saying this is what we have to do before the second leg of the European thing, the Champions League. He was saying I have to get them to control their emotions. How do you do that?
Do you know, because I compete so much, I'm kind of immune to it. Like, I just throw in my headphones and, like, focus. I don't know how to explain it. Like, my coach knows when I'm on, because when we're warming up, he'll look me in the eye and he'll just know Jack's going to get a goal today. So, you know, that's just the way our relationship is. And it's nice, because I can just go in and walking into the ring, I'll just give myself a little slap in the face, stare down the opponent, and it's game time, you know. So it's just, I'm used to it by now.
And is a lot of it that sort of, you know, psyching your opponent out?
So I think it's more people's names in the sport, because we're all so used to each other, we know who each other are. So it's not that we're going in against unknowns and that we need to psych them out or whatever. It's more the big names. So Luckily, the more ranking you get, the more well-known you get, you find a lot of athletes will start to, like,
fear,
like,
you.
Oh, no, I've got that person in the draw. Or they'll look at the draw, because we find out who we fight the day before. So they'll be like, oh, no, and they'll be overthinking it. I know I used to do it as a kid, like when I was maybe like 10 or 12 and I didn't want to fight certain people, and you'd see the draw and you'd be like, oh no, I didn't want that draw. So it's that type of kind of getting rid of them vibes in your training, and just focusing on yourself rather than who's necessarily in front of you.
You have a lovely, quiet confidence about you, Jack. I was looking at when you got the Echo, that's your local paper out there in Tala. When you got the Echo Sports Star of the Year back in 2019, and you were saying how proud you were of yourself. There's something, you know, wonderful about that, being able to say that you're very proud of yourself. That's a good thing. Where did you get that from? Your parents, is it?
Yeah, I've been brought up like that. Just to be humble, not to be arrogant, and but still have a confidence, or still have that, like, you know, focus of I can be the best and there's nothing kind of going to stop me, but still at the same time recognise what I've put in, because I used to get very bogged down years ago. I'd put in a lot of hard work and I might not get to the results I wanted, but my parents taught me, you put in the hard work, you should be proud of yourself for putting in the hard work. Mm. Just put in even more and then you'll eventually get the results you wanted. So, like, that's a good example. Like, when we didn't get Rio, we put in the extra work. I was disappointed for all about 2 weeks, and then we came back and we've become an Olympian.
Yeah, Olympian. Jack Woolley, the first Irishman to qualify for taekwondo in the Olympic Games. I think you're brilliant. I just have to mention that Circle K is supporting Team Ireland athletes in partnership with the Olympic Federation of Ireland. And for the chance to name two mascots and win prizes, you can log on to circlek.ie, because they're helping you out, and that's very important because you're amateur. Jack, we'll talk before you head off to Tokyo, but for the moment, thanks so much.
Thanks very much for having me. Cheers.
Bye.
The Ray Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1. Tweet at Radio Ray RTE. The Ray Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1.
Lovely guy. Now, breast cancer is something that will affect 1 in 9 women in their lifetime. Dr. Laura Lenehan is a GP in Galway, and she has made a video and shared it on her Instagram page to show women exactly how to check themselves for lumps. And you've gone viral, Laura.
Oh, God, I don't know about that, Ray, but yeah, it certainly had a good few people watching it, yes. You know,
firstly, I can't believe that such a video didn't exist before you did it.
Yeah, it's interesting, actually, isn't it? So there's a lot of information out there about how to check your breasts, but it's all very, is PC the right word? I don't know what the right word to describe it is.
It's nearly like a biology lesson for junior search.
Exactly,
yes,
like sex ed, back in the day. Absolutely. So you're told what to do. But I suppose the issue with that is that it's quite difficult to understand. You know, even like as a doctor, obviously, we learn how to do it in medical school. We practice this on, you know, fake torsos and fake breasts and friends or whatever. And it's to try and get that across to patients, I suppose, and everybody else to see the importance and to know how to do it. Because I've explained it before through my Instagram page on previous posts, but the questions kept on coming in, you know, but how exactly do you do that? If you don't do it right, you'll feel a multitude that you don't really need to feel. So it kind of grew from there, I suppose.
Yeah. It's and you do it. It's 6 minutes, 6.5 minutes long. Nearly 100,000 women have watched it, and now that you're speaking to us, I'm sure more will. So, what do people get wrong in the main?
I suppose that they have no clue really even where to start. So how to press, you know, so most people, if you're to try to feel your breast, you actually just stick your fingers, the tip of your fingers kind of into your breast and feel around it. Whereas it should be kind of the pulp of your fingers so that you don't feel every little ridge and bump, you know, every rib underneath the breast. It's all about kind of just gently palpating. And I think having a kind of systematic way of doing it as well. And so I'm pretty sure in the video I do one breast one way where I go the whole way around and I do the other breast in quadrants. So finding out kind of what works for you. I suppose is really important as well, and knowing to cover, you know, right up to across the top of the chest and into the axilla, so into your underarm, because the tail of the breast tissue goes right up in there, so we need to check those areas as well.
And some people have found that they need to go to their doctor as a result of watching your video and doing what you suggest.
Yeah, so I've had lots of DMs on Instagram and emails to say that they have found lumps. And a lot of people, I think, are anxious to even do it as well. So seeing the video and seeing someone do it as well as I could, you know, helps them to relax so they do it and then they find things. So I've had, two girls, unfortunately or fortunately, have found cancer or have had cancer confirmed since watching the video, and quite a number of other ladies awaiting, I suppose, diagnosis, awaiting tests and to be seen in the breast clinic that they've attended the GP and they've been referred on. And some that have been told, you know, it's benign, they're happy enough. So good news. And I mean, I suppose it's good news that the cancer is found, if you want to think about it like that, because the reason I did this was the earlier you find the cancer, if there is cancer there, the better. You know, the better your outcomes, the better the result of surgery or chemo or whatever it is. So getting to know your breast is just so important.
How often should you do it?
Once a month, you know, realistically. And when you're starting out, you should really be doing it kind of multiple times over the month, because the issue is, as women, you know, and certainly if you're still pre-menopausal, you know, your breasts will actually change as you go through the menstrual cycle. So a lot of people will notice kind of their lumpier breasts coming towards their period or at ovulation time. So it's worth doing it once a month and pick the same day once a month, and then know what's normal for you, so that when something abnormal maybe appears, you can say, do you know what, I haven't felt that there before. That doesn't feel like they normally feel. I'm going to go get this checked out. And the hope is then that you pick it up when it's small.
Right. Yeah. And I'm wondering, do most women know the connection between alcohol and breast cancer? No.
No, most people don't. Most people don't know the connection with alcohol and most things, unfortunately. And it's interesting because you can decrease your risk of breast cancer specifically by, you know, improving your diet, increasing exercise and decreasing alcohol. And we're not going to go into it today, but there's always a lot of furore over like HRT for menopausal women and the fact that it slightly increases your risk of breast cancer. Whereas actually taking, I can't remember the exact specifics now, but alcohol increases your risk significantly more than HRT, as does being obese. In-house, yes, medics define it with a BMI of greater than 30. They significantly increase it more so than HRT. So by reducing your alcohol risk, you can induce your risk of breast cancer.
Why do you think people don't know that?
Good question. I don't know. The information is out there. It's on every breast cancer website that you read. I know I talk about it and other medics on Instagram talk about it, but it's just not widely spoken about, you know.
Do you think it should, alcohol bottles should carry a health warning?
Yeah, you know, they probably should. I suppose like cigarettes do, yeah. I think, you know, the risk isn't there as much as like a packet of cigarettes causing, you know, lung cancer, but it is there and it is worth being aware of, I suppose.
Yeah. I still can't get over the fact that you're the first person to do this video in Ireland. It's just, it sort of beggars belief in a way, doesn't it? It says something about our attitude to women's health in this country.
I think the issue is, nobody would want to
do it.
I didn't feel comfortable doing it. It's fine. I do it. Like, I did it, and I'm happy, extremely happy that I did it. And I tried to work out how I could do it in the most appropriate way. And you know, the only way to do it is to do it on a pair on breasts.
Yes.
You know, so I thought that this would be the best way to do it. And I mean, there's no point in being shy. And I talk about all kinds of things. I'm all about, like, you know, talking about things, because I think it's hugely important that we kind of break down taboos and talk about all matters in women's health.
And they're doing amazing work now on Liveline over the last couple of days on the menopause, which is brilliant.
Oh, fantastic. Yeah. Yeah, that's another thing we don't talk about enough.
Yeah. So we've tweeted a link to Dr. Laura Lenehan's video there. It's 6 minutes long and it's well worth a watch. Laura, I'm sure we'll talk again. Thanks so much for your time. Mind yourself. Bye now. Bye. Anish Doshan and the Free Scales and Nogla Le Mike O Fina. Good morning. Thank you very much. 51551 Ray at RT.ie. Does anyone know if Bob Ross was related to Lou Kelly? It's Padraig there. And mealworms are delicious. First introduced to them in Thailand. They're dried and cooked with sesame seeds. The nearest thing we have to them taste wise would be lentil chips made with chili and salt. You got to try them. You only live once, says John Tal. I'm up for anything, John. I've eaten ants and other things in the past, so I'm up for it. I'm up for it. Now, 5 on 5, as I said, yeah, time for our quiz of today. Today being the 6th of May, our prize today comes from the Doyle Hotel Collection. And it's a two-night stay in the River Lee Hotel. And you can go to doylecollection.com for details on everything that's on offer in the River Lee Hotel. On the line we have Catherine Cashman. How are you doing, Catherine?
Hi, Ray. How are you?
Good. You're out in Glasnevin in Dublin.
I am, yes.
And you're WFH.
Am I which? You're I'm working from home, yes, of course I am, yes.
OLOL, OMG. TMI.
Bit slow.
Yeah. So are you looking forward to going back into the office or not?
Yes I am, because you kind of miss, I know I work a week on and a week off, so yes I am looking forward, because you mix all the colleagues and all the interaction, but I've been working quite successfully here from home, so but just miss, you know, kind of
the social interaction.
Yeah.
And your son is working from home as well. What's his name?
His name is Rory.
Rory, right.
Yeah.
And what are you in separate rooms or what's the story?
We are, yeah. Yeah, I've kind of taken over one of our living rooms and he has kind of an office space we always had anyway. So, the only thing that's tight over my chair, I have a special back chair and he's very tall. So the kind of kitchen chairs aren't great for him. So the week I'm off, he robs my chair and then I get it back again.
And your husband is watching from the wings and he calls it the business park.
He does, yes. And he says he's the superintendent of the business park. Right. We don't pay him our rent, he's evicting us.
Does he offer you teas and coffees at 11 o'clock in the morning?
No, we have to look after ourselves.
He tells us
he's not the catering staff.
Yeah. Did you start anything new during lockdown? Any new hobbies or anything?
Well, I took up an old hobby that I used to do. I used to knit quite a lot in my younger years. And so I decided, as I had knitted my husband an Aran jumper years ago, and then I knitted Rory one recently, I decided by the time it was that I knitted myself one. So great. I'm in the middle of that. I'm nearly done.
And they're back in fashion now with Taylor Swift.
They are, yeah. So, and then I'm doing my virtual knitting with my young niece.
Great.
Creva Joyce Mooney. She's learning to knit. So I'm teaching her how to knit virtually.
Nice.
So it's kind of...
and yourself and your hubby are boaters, are you?
We are, yes. We're a long time cruising on the Shannon. About 40 years now, 30 years, right. 40 years.
And where's your favourite spot on the Shannon?
Well, I'd have to say that we keep our boat in a place called Carnadoe, which is near Drummond. In County Roscommon we are. So we have a little mooring site off the river. So I would say that's my favourite spot.
Yeah, and it's off the beaten track as well, isn't it?
Yes. It's off the main river. It's on the Grange Waters.
Your little secret. Okay.
Yeah.
You're up against, is it Gabrielle Cadden in Cavantown or Gabriel?
It's Gabriel.
Gabriel, right. How are you doing, Gabriel?
Fine, thanks.
Good. And what's your story?
Well, we're publicans and we've been retired since March of last year through COVID.
Right.
We had been trying to retire beforehand and then COVID arrived, so it was kind of an introductory offer to what retirement will be like.
And are you going to continue with the retirement, yes?
We continue at the minute. Well, when we do open, we will continue to open and, we're hoping to sell and do retire. So.
Okay. And how did you find it then, this sort of testing of the waters when it comes to retirement?
It was grand. Once we got used to it, we were fine. The only time that we would have really got it hard was this last lockdown now.
Mm.
Because probably weather-wise and everything, and we kind of knew what to expect. The first time, weather was great and it was all new to us.
Yeah.
But as it goes on, it gets very clear of what way it is.
It gets very tiresome, doesn't it? I think that's the case for most people. They're finding this stretch particularly bad.
Yeah.
But there's hope, there's vaccinations, there's...
Yes, there's light at the end of the tunnel.
Yeah, politicians talked about normality in August and all those things. So it's all good.
We'll wait and see.
Yeah. What's the name of the pub?
It's The Well.
The Well.
In Bridge Street in Cavantown.
Ah, right, okay.
Yeah.
And you've run it for years, have you, yourself and your husband?
27 years.
Right, okay.
Yeah.
And are you going to travel the world now when you retire, or what are you going to do?
Well, we have a son in us in New Zealand.
Right.
And he's almost 4 years there, and I'd love to go and see it. I don't think my husband's going to be a good traveller at
is
this
he not?
Stage. No. We used to be, but I think he's gone off the idea of it.
Okay, rightio. Now,
we'll see.
Five questions each, Gabriel and Catherine. Whoever answers most correct gets the prize. If it's a draw at the end, we go to a tie-break situation. Good luck to you both. Here we go.
Well, thank you very much. Good luck, Catherine. And you, Catherine.
Okay, Catherine, your first question is this. On this day in 1938... Sorry, I'll start again. On this day in 1913, Gyula David, composer and violinist, was born in Budapest. In which European country would you find Budapest?
Hungary.
Correct answer. Gabriel, on this day in 1757, Frederick II of Prussia's forces defeated the Austrian army at the Battle of Prague. In which European country would you find Prague?
Czechoslovakia.
I'll take that. Czech Republic, I'll take that, yeah. Right, Catherine, second question is an audio one. Have a listen to this. No one told you life was gonna be this way. The job's a joke you broke. Your love life's the old way. On this day in 2004, that TV sitcom broadcast its final episode in the United States of America. Can you name it?
Friends.
Is the correct answer. And for you, Gabriel, have a listen to this. On this day in 2006, actress Julia Haworth married John Wormald in Burnley in Lancashire. She played Claire Peacock in that long-running soap. Can you name it?
Coronation
Street. Is the correct answer. We're flying it. Catherine, your third question. On this day in 1794, Haiti, under Toussaint Louverture, revolted against France. Which of these is the capital city of Haiti? Port-au-Prince or Santo Domingo?
Port-au-Prince.
Is the correct answer. Well done. Santo Domingo is the capital of the Dominican Republic. And for you, Gabriel, on this day in 1978, the South African military went into Angola. Which of these is the capital city of Angola? Harare or Luanda?
Luanda.
Is the correct answer. Harare is the capital of Zimbabwe. It's 3-3. Catherine, your next question is a music one. Have a listen to this. That song, Fast Love, was at number one on this day in 1996. Can you name the singer?
I have to guess. George Michael?
It's a good guess, because it's right. Well done. The late George Michael, yeah. Gabriel, have a listen to this. That song, Under the Bridge, was at number one on this day in 1998. Can you name the all-girl group who sang it?
Girls Aloud?
No. That's a tricky question now. All Saints it is. All Saints. Okay. You're not out of a check, Gabriel. Catherine, you've one question left. If you get it right, Gabriel can't catch you, but if you get it wrong and Gabriel gets her final question correct, then we're into a tiebreak situation. Good luck with this. Tony Blair, long-haired man that he is, and former British Prime Minister, was born on this day in Edinburgh in Scotland. But in which year was he born? 1953, 1957, or 1960?
1953, I'd say.
Wow, they said that with confidence, and you're correct. Yeah, he's 68 today. So there, well done. 5 out of 5. Gabriel, you're up against good, stiff competition there, and that Old Saints question was a bit tricky, but that's the way they fall.
No problem.
Okay, we're going to send you out a Ray Darcy Show mug.
Lovely.
Yeah,
lovely.
And lovely talking to you, and good luck in retirement.
Thank you very much.
See you, Gabriel. Bye now.
Bye.
Bye. Well done, Catherine.
Thanks, Ray. Thanks very much.
You're off to the River Lee, and you can go to doylecollection.com to see what's in store for you. Two nights a day. Right.
Well, my husband Tony's delighted. He was born in Cork.
There you go. Return to the home place. Okay. Yeah. Well done, Catherine.
Okay,
see you now. Bye.
Bye.
Ray Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1. Email ray@rte.ie. The Ray Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1.
I'm a little bit giddy right now, and I'll tell you why, because after we finish today, we've a pre-recorded interview with Paul Weller. Now, I've been a fan of Paul Weller since I was about 15, so he's been part of the soundtrack to my life for over 40 years, and whatever happened along the way, I never got a chance to interview him, but today is the day. I'm probably hexed now by talking about it, so I'm a bit giddy. And we'll play that out tomorrow or one of the days next week. And if you have any questions, if you're a big Paul Weller fan and you've always wanted to ask him a question, maybe get it into us now and I'll put it to him. 51551 or ray@rte.ie, because I know he has a lot of fans in Ireland. Of course, from his days in The Jam and Style Council. And of course, the reason he's on is that he's releasing his 16th solo album, which will be released tomorrow week. Anyway, so if you're a fan and you have a question, get it into us now, 51551 or ray@rte.ie. There you go, Denise Chyla on Shaw. On Shaw. Raymond Darcy on Shaw. PJ Gallagher.
How are you?
You're supposed to say on Shaw, PJ.
Oh, sorry, I beg your pardon. On Shaw. On Shaw. Here I am. Here I am.
How are you?
I'm good, yeah. I'm not too bad. Yeah, it's turning into a nice, decent day, so I'm not too bad at all.
Yeah, yeah. The sun is shining, sky is blue, all that. The big DIY challenge is back on the telly tonight.
It is, yeah.
People all up and down the country try their hand at DIY projects, and you sort of go around. Well, you don't actually now, do you? You can't go around anymore.
Well, you know, I went around a little bit, but like, let's face it, it's you know, I can't get involved, which is probably for probably better to people, to be honest, because I'm so useless, to be honest with you. So I still went around a little bit and saw a few of the projects as I could, but I mean, it was, compared to the first series, it's so, so different, because, you know, like, people, there's the 2 meters thing for a start, and then you can't go into anyone's house, and because TV makers get so paranoid that 2 meters might look smaller, it's actually really 4 meters. So you're kind of shouting at someone over the wall sometimes to keep the space. But yeah. But we got there, and it was actually a lot of fun to make it.
Yeah, well, it's a lot of fun to watch as well. And I know you don't like watching yourself on telly, but I watched the first episode that goes out tonight, this morning. And it's great crack. You know, it must be that the people who involve themselves in DIY, they're a certain personality type, I think.
They really are, yeah. And I think there's a lot of people got involved in it, like, over lockdown, that never threw their hat at anything like that before in their lives. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, remember when one very famous hardware shop opened up in the middle of lockdown, and it looked like sort of an aerial vision of a Swiss roll, like the queue went around the entire building about 6 times. Yeah. So we got so many people wanting to have a go that genuinely never really did any big projects before, and they learned entirely off YouTube and just kind of had a go, which is kind of brave enough, because they never would have done it before, and then they decided, I'm going to do it on TV and I'm going to try and win a few quid as well. So fair play to them, and they really sort of got into the spirit of what it is, which is a fun show, you know?
Yeah. And there was a time not too long ago, 15, 20 years ago, when DIY was monopolised by men, but there are more and more women trying their hand at it.
Yeah, very much so. Yeah, it's totally different. And I guess it's great for the creativity of it too. I suppose traditionally a DIY show might have been just a bunch of lads building a shed or, you know, showing you or doing up a new kitchen or making a really big, you know, toilet for themselves or something. I don't really know. But this is totally different. And like, we'd loads of women throwing themselves into it and making, like, there's a lot of chicken houses. I don't really know what's going on in the pandemic in Ireland and chicken houses, but there's chickens living better lives than anyone at the moment.
Yeah. And there's a cat as well. There's a cat hotel tonight. There's a skate board ramp. There's a renovated speed boat. There's a camping pod. Also, like, the variety is amazing.
Bee houses in the shapes of Russian chateaus. Like, I mean, mad stuff.
Yeah. So, and it's done in a sort of a tongue in cheek way, which suits your personality as well. The whole thing, the music, the little bits of graphics on it, all of that. It all works really well.
Like, I mean, a lot of the shows, they're really good shows before that have been made, like, about DIY. But like, a guy called Dermot turns up to your house and you do a garden or you do your house, and a very famous, you know, expert called Dermot, he shows up and he and you do this big job, and maybe it goes over budget or whatever and it takes years. But this is 10 days. This is literally, this is an in and out, have a go hero TV show. And that's what I love about it.
And there's a 10 grand prize as well, so that's a substantial amount of money. So I'm just looking at the best small project, best inside project, best outdoor project, best upcycling project, and then there's a viewers choice award as well, which people can vote on at rte.ie, and there's expert advice there from Jennifer Byrne and Jimmy Engelzos. Jimmy Inglesos. He's the Ron.
Which sounds like a singer, doesn't he? Yeah, sounds more like he's going to release a new chart hit than give you advice on DIY.
Yeah.
And I have to say, like, they're brilliant. The judges are deadly and all, but every episode I've seen so far when I'm doing the voiceovers is just them slagging my work more than anything else. So
how are you? Have you changed radio station, did I hear?
I am, yeah. I'm over on, we swapped over to Radio Nova now. Myself and Jim McCabe are there now.
Right.
So we had a big change during the pandemic, I suppose. I suppose I was very lucky, you know, that I was able to get up and go to work every single day. That was a huge thing for me, because so many people I was doing gigs with are still completely out of work. And I don't know when that's coming back for them. So I suppose when you see that and you're in, you know, you're talking to people who were touring and had a really good career only a matter of months ago, or well, it's a year ago now. You forget how time is passing, but their career just exploded, and their debts are still there. You know, there's still mortgage payments and car payments, but they worked in the entertainment industry and they did gigs, and it's gone. And there's still no real crack of light for when we can have full rooms again. Like, it makes you very grateful for what you have, you know.
Yeah, and like what you do on the radio is a performance as well. Like, it's not gag a minute, but you know, you have to be funny.
Well, that's, yeah, I guess I do, yeah. I suppose that's the job. But, I suppose it's kind of just telling people that it's okay to get up in the morning, though. Yeah. And that's, I suppose, when that's the attitude of it, it comes a little bit easier. And in fairness, I mean, it's, you're going into work to have fun with your friend.
Yeah.
Like, it's not, you know, I'm going into a person who cheers me up naturally every day, you know. So it's not like a dread go. Like, myself and Jim, we are really good mates. Like, we text each other all the time about football. We're into the same teams. We've the same interests. So it's hard to, like, it's not like you dread going into work. So it's a good environment to go in and have fun in.
Mm. So did you get involved in any of the online Zoom type gigs?
No, definitely not. No, I can't. I haven't the head for it. Honest to God, like, I barely have the head for a live stand-up with an audience in the room. So doing Zoom gigs for me just feels completely out of reach. I can't. It just feels like, I don't know, telling a joke, hearing no laughter, and maybe watching people turn their screens off and watching people go to the toilet. I can't do it. I can't. My confidence wouldn't be able to take it. I'd go insane. So I leave it. Like, there's a lot of really young, good comedians coming through at the moment who are great, making great video content. Yes. I'm not one of them. So I like
it. But that being said, though, like, Naked Camera, like, you were brilliant on that. I'm very visual and it was sketch-based. You would think that you would be perfect for,
I guess,
the new world.
I don't know. It was very interactive. I mean, Naked Camera, the big character, the very funny character in the show was Ireland.
Yes,
so, you know, and we made that mistake. When we went off to America, we learned fairly quick that when you take Ireland out of it, it doesn't really work the same way. So I guess I need to have that interaction to make something really, really work. And when I see, like, when I look at some of the videos that the young comedians are making, and it's just them sitting in their house on their own coming out with ideas, that to me is, that's insanely brilliant. I don't know how they do it.
Yeah. I didn't intend to talk about Naked Camera, but it's due a revival, isn't it?
Do you think?
I think so, yeah. And you know what? The technology's come on in leaps and bounds since you did it. You know, you'd find that it'd be easier to do a hidden camera show.
It'd probably be easier to. Well, I don't know, actually, would it? Because everybody presumes they're being filmed now. When we did it in 2004, nobody ever assumed they'd be on camera. And that's kind of how it worked. No matter what you said to someone or how weird the situation got, there was no one ever assumed they were being filmed or something weird was happening. And now every time you open your phone, you see Instagram and somebody's doing some stupid prank on somebody else.
There's a lot of it on TikTok, isn't there? There's a lot of that sort of stuff on TikTok.
No, I can't get into TikTok. Getting into TikTok feels like getting into cartoons now in my 40s. I just feel like I'm way out of that loop. I just feel like I'm not wanted there. I feel like the creepy lad with a leather jacket walking around the pub, to be honest. When I go on TikTok, I don't feel welcome there at all.
So what are you doing to keep yourself sharp, you know, when it comes to gigs? Because they will come back eventually. It'll probably be the last thing back, first thing to stop and last thing back. But do you keep yourself? Do you stand in front of the mirror at home with a hairbrush in your hand?
Honestly, I don't. I guess this was a big realisation for me. I've always worried that if gigs stopped, what would I do? Mm. And I think, to be honest, I don't really want to go back to gigs.
Do you not?
Not really. I mean, I always could feel tortured when I do gigs. I always felt so tortured getting on stage, the anxieties of it. I only ever really did gigs and did stand-up because I wanted to feel good at something. I didn't really care what that was. And then stand-up kind of came along and I felt
you
like I was good at it.
Yeah.
And now it kind of feels like I've ticked the box and now it's nothing left in it but the anxiety and the stage fright. And like when I'm doing radio's where I want to be. It's very hard to talk myself back onto the stage again. So I guess one thing I've learned in the pandemic is if you can stay where you are, like, you ask yourself how much is enough, and to be honest, at the moment it's enough. I don't really plan on going back on stage unless I really have to. I probably will have to because I have to pay bills, but I'll be delaying it for as long as possible.
That's interesting, because you spoke about your stage fright in that documentary. That could be 10 years old now, PJ, is it?
Oh, it's probably 2008 or 2009. Yeah, yeah, probably is around that. Yeah, I'd say you're probably about right. Yeah,
yeah, yeah. And of course, then we saw you in Young Offenders and other things. So the acting, and that was, I remember talking to you about that. That was the one thing you wanted to do. The acting came before the stand-up, didn't it?
Yeah, definitely, yeah. Because you're with other people. You're not just sitting on... I think I said it to you before, being a stand-up's a bit like being a... when I was a courier. It's just I deliver jokes instead of parcels. Like, most of the job is driving. And then when you get to... when you deliver your jokes and you talk to someone, no one's allowed to talk back. So it's an unusual existence. You know? Yeah. Whereas, you know, everything else, like acting and... much more interactive.
No, I'm fascinated by this, because when I've spoken to loads of comedians over the years and they talk about, you know, the laugh, and it's nearly drug-like that you get addicted to it.
Yeah.
But you're not.
No. I think I just spent a lot of time knocking on the door saying, please notice me, please tell me I'm alive, and then they did, and then I kind of went, thanks a million, that's enough. It's a dysfunctional way to live your life, to be honest, isn't it? Standing up on stage and asking people to like you, it's a very strange way to behave.
It's a bit needy when you put it like that.
It's a really needy, strange thing to do. And maybe I'm getting more mentally healthy and I feel like I don't need it anymore.
Oh, that's brilliant. Right. We'll continue this conversation at a future date. The big DIY challenge is back tonight on your televisions, RT1 8:30, fronted by the great PJ Gallagher. Okay, brilliant. Mind yourself, PJ.
Thanks a million. It's always like therapy with you, Ray. Thank you.
See you. Bye. Bye. That's PJ there. Right, Cormac and Sarah on the way. We are back tomorrow at 3 o'clock with that interview, hopefully, with Paul Weller. Whatever you're doing, do it safely and enjoy it.
It's the Ray Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1.